afternoon. My name's Bill Armstrong. I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober since December 15th, 1984, and I would like to thank the committee for inviting me. I'll tell you the story. Actually, I'm here on vacation, and I'm just a backup, you know, and that's kind of my story right there. I'm just sort of basic backup. It was never anyone's first choice. It was kind of an afterthought. And yesterday was my belly button birthday, and a girl I sponsor has moved here to Las Vegas, and it's her birthday too. Our birthday is the same day, and her wonderful husband, I guess he asked her, what do you want for your birthday? And she said, my sponsor. And I'm on a mission of mercy, I'm sure, to help her. And it's like my birthday present to come out and play and have fun. And then I got a call that the speaker had canceled and due to illness, and I said yes. And that's because that's what I've been taught in Alcoholics Anonymous, just to say yes and get in the car and get on the plane and shut up a lot and do what I'm supposed to do. And you know, that seems to have worked. That seems to work for an alcoholic of my type. I'm the alcoholic of the books type. I'm the real alcoholic. I'm not a pretend alcoholic or halfway or anything. I love to drink, and I loved what you said. If I could still drink successfully and get away with it, I would still be drinking. You'd have a different speaker today. But I'm not. I was born in Oklahoma to two normal alcoholic parents. They're normal to me, and I have a younger brother. He's 13 months younger than I am, and my father and mother got divorced before I remember they were married. They did. I don't remember them being married, and my father moved to California, and my mother took care of us for a while. My mother was, I thought, one of the most beautiful women I'd ever seen. I loved my mother, and she was a registered nurse, and she would come to school when I was in kindergarten, and she would be dressed all in white, and they wore, you know, the hat and everything, and when it was real cold outside, she had this blue cape she wore. I just thought she was something out of a movie, like a book. I just thought she was wonderful. And unfortunately, my mother suffered from this disease, I believe, and she got drunk a lot, and she was a blackout drunk, and she would leave us places. Sometimes she would forget where she left us. She'd leave us at a babysitter in a blackout and forget which one we were at. We'd be there for several days, and she left us with my grandmother a lot. And one day the social workers came, and somebody had, I guess, called them and said, this old lady, I mean, my grandmother was an old lady, and she's trying to take care of these two little kids, and they put us in a foster home in Oklahoma, and that would be the first of many foster homes and families that my brother and I would live with. And that is called the disease of alcoholism. That isn't, to me, anything else but that. My brother and I went to live in this foster home, and my father got word in California that his children were in a foster home. My uncle, Bill, called him, and he came, and he got custody. My father got custody of us. Now, that was not popular back then. Men did not get custody of their children very often. And what I found out later on was that my mother just didn't show up for court. And, you know, today, because of this magnificent program, because of this 12 steps that I have taken, and I try to practice, I know that that is absolutely the very best she could do. I absolutely know that because I'm an alcoholic, and I understand that. I would not see my mother again. I was 7 years old at this time. I would not see my mother again until I was 19, and that's alcoholism. And we went to live with my father. He had married a nice Mexican lady, and about 300,000 people picked us up at the airport, and they were hugging and kissing. Oh, I loved them from the get-go. And then we went to someone's house and had, like, fiesta, you know. I mean, hello, drinking and tamales and salsa, and I thought, I've arrived, you know. I loved that family. They partied, they drank, and they'd fuss and fight and make up, and I liked it. It was always, you know, kissing and affectionate, and I thought, God, this is great. And unfortunately, my father had the disease of alcoholism, and it was in full bloom, and he they got divorced, and we went to Arizona, and we went to Arizona to live with my dad's brother, my uncle Jack, and his wife Mary. And we went to live there, and I would not see that lady again until I was 18 years old, and that's alcoholism. My aunt and uncle had two children of their own, and they took us in very graciously. And because God works and I get in the car, my aunt and uncle are here in this room tonight, today. Yeah. I don't get to see them that often, and I called my aunt on Mother's Day and wished her happy Mother's Day, and I told them I was, you know, going to be here, and they said, that's not far from us. We'll get in the car, and, you know, how nice that people want to come and see me today. I mean, they didn't get in the car a lot back then, I'll tell you what. They went the other direction or didn't tell me they were in town or something, you know. And, you know, they took care of us and they loved us, and they had two children, and they're my cousins, but they're kind of like brothers and sisters. And we lived there for a while, and it was really good, and something really magnificent happened. My father got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 10 years old. And, it would change my life forever. Now, I didn't know that at the time. I was busy feeling sorry for myself. I did that on a regular basis. My friends of mine that have said, you know, Sheila, you really did have kind of a sad childhood, but you were so busy feeling sorry for yourself, nobody else could. You did such a good job. And I did. And that's just the way it was. And so my brother and I, we went to, my dad got a sponsor, and they had sat down, and we went to go to California, and my dad could not take care of us at the time. My aunt and uncle took us to a foster home, and we were to live in this foster home, and I was thinking of this last night. It was so funny, before I fell asleep, and I remember I said to my cousin, either Valerie or Jack, I said, well, say goodbye to me, give me a hug, because I'll never see you again, because that's how it started feeling. And my Aunt Mary said, don't ever say that. We will always come and see you again. You know, and they did. And I always felt like, what is wrong with me? I mean, it's like, it's not normal for grown-ups to keep leaving children. You know, what is wrong with me? And it wasn't so much, it wasn't me. I was a kid. It was alcoholism. And this disease is probably, I just hate this disease. It's one of the worst diseases because it hurts so many people. And there's nothing outwardly that you really see except a drunk. And it's just a sad deal. One of the things that we did, we lived in this foster home, and it was a black foster home. And we're only supposed to stay there a couple of weeks till, I guess, a white foster home opened up. And which I always thought was odd. But it was the 60s. It was the late 60s, and you didn't really, you know, mix it up then, you know. And we really liked it. And this home, and this lady, Betty, and her husband, Leo, and she had a son, and we wanted to live there. And I told my dad, you know, of all the foster homes we ever had to live in, this one's the best, and we were supposed to be there 2 weeks, and we ended up living there 3.5 years, and that was it was a good place, and my aunt and uncle came to visit a couple of times, and grandpa, my granddad, and my father kept getting sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. He met a nice lady in AA. They got married. She had two kids. He had two kids. It was not the Brady Bunch when we got together. It was pretty sick. You know, it had taken two sick. Oh, we were just crazy. We were teenagers, and oh, we were just nuts. And so that marriage didn't last very long. And so this lady he married had a sister, and he didn't marry her, but he thought about it, I'm sure. No, my dad had marriageitis, and he said it, you know. He loved the ladies, I'll tell you what. Mm-hmm. And he married every one of them, I swear to God. He's married 5 times. You know, and I'm still picking up the pieces on Mother's Day, calling them all. And I need some stock and Hallmark cards, I tell you what. So, this lady that he'd married, he had the sister, and we went down the street from my dad's house. She lived down the street with 4 children. She was a single mother. She had 4 children and a mother that lived with her. And we went to live with her. And she took us in. And it was funny, I'd come home from cheerleading practice, and my dad'd be watering the lawn, he'd be watering the lawn, and I'd wave at him, and my girlfriend, who's that? And I go, well, that's my dad. And they go, your dad lives down the street from you? And I go, yeah, doesn't yours? You know? Because the abnormal becomes normal, you know? That was normal, and it was better. My dad and I did not get along, oh, no, for a very, very long time. We had a terrible relationship, and I had a big part in that, and we didn't. And it was better that he lived down the street from me, and I. And so I have drank at this time. I have not had my first drunk, but I've had sips. I mean, I've probably had sips since I was four. I don't remember my very first sip drink. I remember my first drunk. I got asked to the prom. I'm 15 years old. I got asked to the prom. The guy said, you don't have a date, and I don't have a date. Would you like to go to the prom? I thought, how romantic. Okay, we'll go. And my cousins were all going, and my aunt wanted to buy me like a nice dress and make it really, really special and everything. And she was so nice. She was so sweet. And I said, okay, you know. And so we go to get the dress, and I pick out like a kind of a snug yellow low-cut dress. And she picks out this giant green dress, and she's holding it like this. Isn't this beautiful? And it's got these big green flowers on it, and it had this accordion neck that went up here with a ruffle at the top. And it's like cinched right here at my ribs, which hurt, and went out. It was just awful. It looked like something, you know, Tammy would wear in a movie, you know, Tammy and the Doctor at the party or something. But I'm kind of in trouble already. I'm hanging out with the bad boys and smoking cigarettes and doing some stuff I probably shouldn't be doing. And I'm the kind of alcoholic that I'll push you right to the edge, and right when I know you're about to get rid of me or yell at me or kill me or something, I'll do something really wonderful, and, oh, you love me again. So it's time to do something really wonderful at this point, so I got the green dress. And And then my aunt said, well, would you go to my hairdresser? And, you know, hindsight's so 20/20. None of her daughters never went to her hairdresser to this day. They've never been. I don't know why. I said, well, okay, you know, how bad could it be? So it was. So she rolls my hair up, and my hair is like down my back, and it's the, you know, it's mid-70s, and you wear your hair long and straight, you know, maybe curl at the ends on a special occasion. And so I was under the dryer for a couple of weeks, I think. It felt like that. My ears burned so badly, and she kept piling my hair, and it kept getting bigger and bigger, and it kind of went out like a football. It turned out this big. And it went out, and then my aunt comes in. She goes, oh, Sheila, you look so beautiful. And she had yellow and white baby's breath, and so then they're sticking the baby's breath in the hair, you know, and it's insult to injury, if you ask me. And so me and my hair go out to the car. We get in the car. We go home. I put the giant green dress on, and I'm a bush in bloom. That's how I felt. It is not what I envisioned for me, for the prom. You know, I'm a dreamer. And so the date of mine, 3 days before the prom, he decides he needs money. So the guys bet him $100 at school during lunch that if they'd give him $100 if he would bite the head off a live frog. Well, he did it. Yeah, in front of everybody. And so, I don't know, I was at the principal's office or something, and everybody comes running up to me, and they go, Sheila, the guy you're going to the prom with just bit the head off a live frog. And I thought, can anything ever go right just once? You know, just once. So my, you know, the family's there, and all the girls are dressing, and the guys in the tuxedos, and we've got tons of kids coming over, and I'm looking like I'm looking, and they come in, you know, and my dad comes from up the street, my foster mother came. It's really neat. And in comes my date, you know, and he didn't even like get a good car, you know. Everyone like borrowed a good car, got their parents' car. And he had a Dodge Dart, you know. And he said to me, he says, it's an antique. Well, it is now. It wasn't then. It was just old, you know. And he, you know, you pushed a button to start it, and that was the big thrill. And so, he, you know, it was just, yeah. And so my dad is there, and I, you know, I have this relationship with my dad. It's love me, love me, love me, and I do everything I can to push him away, you know, just like that. And so my little cousin Kelly, he looks up and says, are you the guy that bit the head off a live frog? How cool. You know, he thought he was his, you know, hero or something. And my dad's eyes kind of roll up, back up in his head, and what? And he had this big voice, and I said, let's get out of here. So we get out of here, and he's got champagne in the car, and he's got those plastic glasses, those champagne glasses, you know, the ones at the bottom never stays on, ever. I'm trying to look as elegant as I can in my trying to adjust this glass all night. And we had a little champagne. We go to the prom, then we go to the after parties. Oh, the after parties! It was wonderful. People kept mixing drinks. They, you know, I kept thinking, oh, it's not going to hurt me. I've only had this little tiny glass, you know. And they'd make me tequila sunrises, and I'd drink that up, and they'd make a salty dog. And, oh, I was just enthralled with all of it. I had 150 of those puppies, and I'll tell you what happened. My hair got long and straight. Those flowers flew off my dress, and frog lips started looking really good. I mean, oh, yeah, that kind of good. And that's what alcohol does for me. It changes my perception of reality. The reality is that my dress, and I still look the same, everything's the same, but I put that magic stuff in me, and I'm okay. And I like you. You're even likable. I can even go out with frog lips, you know? I mean, it changed me, and nothing had changed. Nothing had changed, but everything changed for me. And that's what alcohol did for me, and it did it for me for a long, long time. I didn't care anymore that I lived in foster homes. You know, I could take a deep breath, as I've heard said so many times. I felt at peace with you. And I was at ease. I was absolutely at ease. It gave me ease and comfort. And so, you know, I didn't become a full-blown alcoholic, I don't think, but I did black out and pass out my first, you know, time out. I really did. And I knew what a blackout was before I had one because, see, my dad's been in AA all this time. I used to babysit your children. You'd come over and you were always at my house, you know, and you'd smoke cigarettes and drink coffee and talk a lot. I thought, oh, how fun for them. And I thought it was great for Dad, you know, but I knew about blackout. I knew about a lot of stuff. I knew probably more than most 15-year-olds knew about alcoholism because I was around you all. And even in my mind, I kept thinking, that really wasn't probably a blackout because I didn't leave the state. Dad always left the state in a blackout. It was a brownout, more like a brownout kind of thing. And I'm already justifying stuff. And I just, you know, I got out of high school. I had a high school sweetheart that broke my heart, of course. Everyone has those. And I, you know, boys and booze, they, you know, go together kind of like soup and sandwich, you know. You got to have both. I do anyway. And then I went into the wonderful world of waitressing. I became a waitress, and I started waitressing, and I really liked it, and I was good at it and made good money. I went and found my mother. I was 19 years old, and I was on this search of my mother. And I went and found her. She lived in Dallas, Texas. And she was such a beautiful woman. And what I saw was she lived in a place where people live that are on Social Security. She was the youngest person that lived there, and everyone took care of her. And she looked horrible, and she was very old-looking. And the beautiful woman that I knew was gone. And it talks about it in our book that women go down in a few short years. And I kept thinking, if I just had my mom, everything would be all right. Because I always thought that, and that wasn't it either. And I felt so awful when I left there. And, you know, I thought about it later when I got sober. My mother was only 48 years old. I thought she was like in her 60s when I saw her, but she was 48 years old, and that's very young. And she looked like she was in her 60s. And she had lost an eye from drinking, and she was just very, very ill. So I went to... I just went and partied, came back and partied and had fun. And I woke up in a field one night, came to in a field, and it scared me. It really did scare me. And that night I was going to my dad's 10th AA birthday at his group, a Saturday night meeting at the Pacific Group. And I heard a lady speak, and I heard me. And there was another gal there, and her name was Sharon Barker, and she had just gotten her mouth unwired. She had oh, I loved her. I thought, God, she's my kind of lady, getting her mouth wired. You know, that's cool. And so I went and talked to her and told her I might have a problem with, you know, maybe I have a problem. And she said, why don't you come to some meetings? And I did. And I started going to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was 19, 20 years old. And I stayed sober for 9 months. But I really didn't think I was powerless over alcohol. I really didn't take the steps. I didn't really do the book. I ran around, did a lot of activities and fellowships, but, you know, I wasn't taking the steps. I wasn't doing the things that I need to do, this alcoholic needs to do today to stay sober. And I didn't stay sober. I would have an 8-year slip. I would not come back to Alcoholics Anonymous for 8 years. I didn't come in and out, I just left. And what happened then, I went to pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization in the next 8 years. And I got a call. I met a him, another him, and I thought, you know, maybe if I settle down a little bit. And so I married this guy. He owned a bar. I thought, well, yeah, free beer and pool the rest of my life. I do, and I did. And he was just a great guy. He's a great Irishman. Everyone loved him. Everyone loved him. And I don't share. Okay, I don't share even drunk. And so, our marriage was, you know, 3 months later, our marriage is on the rocks, and 4 months later, it's even worse. And I get a call from Dallas, Texas, that my mother is gravely ill in the hospital. And so I fly to Dallas, and I went there, and this kind nurse said to me, you know, I really want to tell you, I want to warn you before you go in there. And she was dying of cirrhosis, and I don't know if you've ever seen anybody dying of cirrhosis. And the lady was trying to be so kind. I said, you know, look, I've been through so much in my life. This is not going to be a big deal. And that's where I'd gotten so hard and bitter and just like ice. And I walked in there. My mother was bright yellow, and she had tubes running in and out of her, and she was in an alcoholic coma, and she was in a coma. The nurse said, you know, the last thing to go is the hearing, and maybe she'll hear you. So I sat and I talked to her, and I read to her, and I felt very sorry for myself and for her. The next day, her sisters came, and, you know, everyone was so sad. And then they started telling me all these things I did as a little baby and stuff. And what's going through my head, I don't say this, of course, I just think it, well, where did you guys go? How come you never came and got me? You know, those thoughts are going through my head, and it's, you know, the book talks about that. Thank God for fourth and fifth steps. And all this stuff, I call it stuff. And the stuff is going on, and the nurse comes, we had to step outside because the doctor was examining her, and the nurse comes out and says, you need to come in here right now. And, oh, well, this is it. And we walked in there, and my mother was sitting up, and she said, will you forgive me? Yeah. And I said, yes. And I really learned about forgiveness here in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I am so grateful. I'm so grateful. My mother and I had 3 really great days together. And I went back to California because I didn't know how long she would be this well. He said she could be, you know, last 6 months, 6 weeks. And I didn't really have any money left. And I went back and I said, I'll be back, Mom. And she died 2 days later on Good Friday. And that's her story. You know, I don't think any alcoholic ever dies in vain. And maybe through her death, I got life today, up to this point. I just really don't believe it's ever in vain. And I went back to Los Angeles and divorced that him. It was probably his fault anyway, you know, the whole deal, you know. Gotta blame somebody. I called my father, I would go for long periods of time and never even call him. And there would be times further down the road that I would, you know, he didn't even know where I lived or where I was or who I was with or if I was all right. And you know, I have 2 sons today, and I just can't imagine not hearing from them for months at a time and not knowing if they were all right. And in my inventory, I had to look at my part in the relationship with my father, and that was I stole his happiness. I stole a lot of things from him. His right to be happy, to have peace of mind. I contributed to our bad relationship. I broke his heart. And because of the 8th and 9th step, we had a coming together and a healing. Only because of you, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I owe everything to Alcoholics Anonymous, truly, and my God. I just went crazy after that. I divorced him. I waitressed at night. I became a manicurist. I'm still a manicurist. I didn't become a brain surgeon. I don't have that great a story, guys. Sorry. That's a great story, though. I'm still a manicurist. I'm just a better manicurist. I actually paint the fingernails today and not the knuckles from shaking so bad. I owe a lot of amends to women that their cuticles look terrible today. They're probably injured for life. And I would waitress at night and party all night and get up and go to work or sleep on the beach, and I just lived this crazy, crazy, crazy life. And I met another him, and I fell off a car. I was drunk in a parking lot, and I fell off a car, and he picked me up, and we spent the next couple weeks together. That's how I date. It's true story, and we fell madly in lust, as you know, lust, love, you know, whatever it's called, and we had this real sick relationship for a while, and I got pregnant, and he didn't want to be, and so when I was 8 months pregnant, he left, and I remember thinking, what's wrong with me? What is wrong with me? Why doesn't anyone ever stay with me? And you know, I got here, and I found out my picker was broke. I was so happy to find that out. I had a sponsor that pointed it out to me several times that I shouldn't probably date anyone in or out of AA forever. She said, you're far too sick for anyone, Sheila. And when you get better, I'll let you know. And I said, thanks. And she was right, you know, she was just right. And so my picker was broke, and I had this baby boy, and I loved him from the minute I saw him, and with all my heart. And I was going to be a good mom. I was going to stop drinking. I was going to stop using drugs. I was just going to do everything I could. I was going to learn to bake cookies. You know, I was going to be the PTA mom. And I meant it. I meant it with all my heart. And I couldn't do it. So he fixed me for about 2 weeks, and then I was off running and gunning and going to the bars and doing the things that I do. And I don't like that part of my story. I just always feel like I hear so many women in AA that I know are alcoholics that when they were drinking that they didn't drink while they were pregnant, and that's not my story. I did, and I've always felt it was horrible guilt. I had a lot of guilt. My sponsor today is Peg Martin. She has many years of sobriety, and she's my light, and she really helped me with that, because the book says there's a point where we cannot stop, that we will wish to but we can't, and that's what happened. She said, unfortunately, Sheila, it says that we lose the choice, and unfortunately you were pregnant. And so then, you know, so I have to, how do I get rid of that kind of guilt? How do you do that? And what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous is that I take right actions that it relieves my guilt. That I can't, there are some wrongs I can never fully right. That's what the book says. And I can't. I can never fully right that one. But I can help others. I can go, you know, I can go to everything I can go to. I have learned to take actions in AA that made me feel better. This one girl I sponsor, well, when I first started sponsoring, she said, I really suffer from low self-esteem. I said, oh, really? And a lack of self-worth from my childhood. I said, oh, really? And I said, if you want self-esteem, do esteemable things. You know, that's what my sponsor said. That's so simple, it made me crazy. You know, I wanted to get into some deep, psychological, beautiful talk with her. And she said, if you want self-esteem, do esteemable things. Okay, that was easy. You know, quit doing the things that you're doing that make you feel bad about yourself. You know, because I was always looking for you to give something to me to make me better. That it should be, it was the world's job to fix me. And that's between me and God. And the steps, and sponsors, and going to meetings, and, you know, showing up, and getting there early, and staying late, and sitting still while you're there. Boy, I was a wiggle worm in meetings. I couldn't sit still. My sponsor, oh, she had an eyebrow thing going on, you know. I think, well, she ought to pluck that thing, get rid of it. You know, and I'd walk into meetings late, because I thought I was so cute, and y'all see me, how cute I am, and she'd look at her watch and look at me and look at her watch, and I thought, oh good, more approval from sponsor. And then she'd say things like, is our meeting time bad for you, Sheila? Because I could talk to the chairman and we'll just rearrange the whole thing for you. She was so kind and tolerant of me. And I was telling Julie today, you know, we were driving up here, I said, yeah, I don't think she liked me. I don't, and you know, but that's okay. I didn't mean anybody to, you know. She was exactly what I needed. Now, some people, I believe, maybe they need love and encouragement. I will run over you. I'm that kind of person. I don't appreciate things that come too easy, you know. And I'm a user of people, and that's just who I was. And she knew it. And she was everything I could have ever needed. I had this baby, and I met a Marine. You know, gosh. And I met another him, and ran off to Oceanside, California, Well, you know, they take care of the whole United States, and I thought I'd be all right. You know, I just thought, well, gosh, the few and the proud, I mean, they take care of the whole U.S., you know, if we're in alert, the Marines are the first ones to be called. And, you know, he said, you're just too much for me, honey, you got to go. And because I when I drink, I get violent, and I want to smack people and stuff. I'm just a bad drunk. I'm a bad drunk. I want to fight grown giant men. You know, I'm not a real big girl, but I think I am when I'm drinking. And I have all this anger, and it just comes out, and I'm just wanting to fist fight. It's just ridiculous. And you know, today I'm glad I don't live that way today, or I'd be dead probably. But so I met this Marine who ran off, and it was just crazy. And he ended up leaving, and I went to live with this gal I worked with at a salon, and she let me live there, and my son and I were sleeping on her floor. And my father had married a nice lady in Al-Anon, a black belt Al-Anon is what he married, and moved to Oklahoma, and my life would never be the same again. And he moved to Oklahoma, and I would be drinking all night. I would stay out all night and get up. I would come in, and she would watch Brad because I was working a night shift trying to make a little extra money, but I'd stay out all night. So I'd sneak in about 6 and pretend to be asleep. And then when the house started getting up around 7, I'd act like I'd been there, you know, most of the night. And she caught me coming in one night and said, I don't know what your problem is, but she said, you need some help. I know your mother's dead, but you have to call somebody. She said, you've got, and I did. I had a welt on me, and one of my eyes was horribly dilated, and the other one wasn't. She thought I was having a stroke, and I was very, very ill. And so I called my father, and his wife answered. My father was doing a fist step with someone in the back room, and she said, he's doing a fist step, but we'll call you right back. And I said, well, I just thought I'd let you know that I'm going to put Brad in a foster home, and I'm just going to walk the streets because I can't live this way anymore. And here I am, I'm doing the same thing. It's the same thing. And she said, no, 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 we'll call you back. And so they finally called me back. They called me back right away, and I went and got drunk. You know, that's the story. I mean, and she says to this day that she said, Dad said, well, I wonder where she is. She said, Jim, hello, where would you be? Oh, yeah, you know. And she knew, you know, she just knew, and he knew. And I never said, I'm an alcoholic, please help me. If my dad had sent me money, you'd have a different speaker. If he had got me an apartment like I needed, you'd have a different speaker. He sent me a one-way, non-cashable, non-refundable, non-anything. I checked ticket. Boy, he was, you know, he invented tough love. Trust me on that one. So I went to Oklahoma, and I went to Al-Anon meetings for a while, because in that house you had to go to something, and I wasn't admitting anything really. And I did identify. I love you, alcoholic men. I truly do. I'm not married to one of you today, thank God. But I mean, you beat me. It's over. You won. I give. But it was, you know, the thing is, I identified in Al-Anon. Except I would say things like, after the meeting, this woman was crying one night. Her person, her love, had left, her alcoholic, and she was just really sad. And I said, oh, have a drink and a Quaalude. He'll be home. Now, they don't even drink in a crisis, you know. I thought, my God, they do this stuff. They said, I've set up and waited for him for a while, and then I get drunk and pass out. You know, and they do this sober. They stand by that window sober all night. That's just insanity. There's a whole room full of people for you. No. You know, because, I mean, I just, you know, I'm not that patient, I guess. And so so I went these Al-Anon meetings, and then I got in a fight with my father, as I always do. You know, I always have to find a fault with you so I can leave. And so I can move out. And so I moved out fighting with my father and went to live with some girls and thinking, you know, California was probably my problem. And if I could just get out of California, everything would be all right. You know, if I could just get out of California and move to Oklahoma, it would be great. You know, so I'm in Oklahoma. I think, well, I'll meet some old boy and we'll raise chickens or something, you know, and calm down and get out of the fast lane. And I met the same people doing the same thing because of, you know, I took me with me and I never changed me. I never changed me. And I was trying to stay sober and doing these things. And I moved out and I started drinking really badly and heavily again. And it was just picked up where I left off. And one night I we had a party at our house, and I put my son to bed, and he was about 18 to 20 months old, about 20 months old then, and put him to bed, and he was asleep, and I went into a blackout. I assume I drank so much, so I came to the next morning. He was not in bed where I put him. I went up, I jumped up. It was December 15th, 1984, very, very cold in Oklahoma, December 15th. And I went to the rooms of my roommates, and he wasn't in there, and I was in stark terror. I thought, my God, he's gone outside and froze to death, and I couldn't find him. And I went outside, and I'm crying, and I'm screaming, and, you know, I have mud all over me from the night before. Don't know how I got that, and I couldn't find him. And my roommate got up and said, what is wrong? And I said, I can't find Brad. And you know, my son was coming down the hall, and I never want to forget this as long as I live. And he had these little yellow jammies with the feet in it. And he put his hands up, and he said, Mom. And she said, oh, he was in my room, and he was snuggled under the comforter so I couldn't see him when I peeked in the room. And she said, he came in my room last night because you weren't here, and he was afraid. And I had a moment of clarity. It's what our book talks about. I just had a moment of clarity. This was not my mother's fault. This was not my father's fault. This was my fault. I had done this to my own child. And I'd gotten some phone numbers because some of you women were out of self enough to see me at an open AA meeting and spot it. You know, at least if you got it, just if you spot it, you got it, and I had it, and they spotted it. And they gave me, the AA women would give me their phone numbers and say, you know, call us if you ever need to talk. So I called this one gal named Mary, and she wasn't home, but her husband was, and he was a good, my father knew him very well, and he said, you know, I know more about you than I probably should, Sheila. Are you drunk right now? And I said, no, I'm just really hungover, and I almost lost Brad, and I was just upset. And he said, get your over here, and I did. I went over to his house, and he set me down at his kitchen table with a big book and a cup of coffee. And he said to me, you never have to feel this way again if you don't want to. You never have to drink again if you don't want to. And everything will be all right. And I heard it. I heard that. It was music to my ears. I'm sure people have probably said things like that to me before, but I didn't hear it. I was very desperate. I was surrendered at that moment. 10 minutes later, Bob Darrell says, I just love this. You know, an alcoholic loses everything, and I'd lost everything except my child, and I almost lost him. And he says, an alcoholic can lose everything, and the first thing they get back is their opinion. You know, and I do. And he said, you need to go to a meeting tonight. And I said, well, I'm not going to y'all's group, though, because that's my dad's group. And that's, I want my own AA. Aren't I special? And he said, well, Sheila, that's a good group. It's, you know, solid, and you need that kind of group. And I said, well, no, you know, I don't want to go to dad's group. I'll go to my own AA group. He said, well, I think you should be there. I hope you come. So it gets to be about 7:15, and I'm not coming. You know, because I probably overreacted again. You know how we do, oh my God, I'm going to turn myself into AA again. First it was a field, now it's this, I don't know. Maybe I've overreacted. And so what happened was, my roommates said, are you going to that AA meeting tonight? And I said, no, I think I'm all right now. She said, plus I don't have a babysitter for Brad. And they both went, we'll watch him. Now, when your drinking buddies want to watch your children to go to an AA meeting, you might take a look at your drinking. You just might. So I did. So I went to the meeting, and I'm getting in my beat-up car, beat-up bad. I got this car. I moved there and got this car for $275. And it had no heat, no air, barely a roof. I mean, it was just what it got me there. And I set out to go to my AA meeting. And I realized I had never been to another group in that town. I had no idea where another AA meeting was. And I'm sure that was God working in my life. And so I went to this meeting. And what happened was I walked in, and my father was there. And I had on these horribly tight jeans. And just, I looked really bad. You know, just that I want to look good, but I'm hard, and I look terrible. I'm sick. And my dad was at the meeting, and his wife, and he looked at me, and he saw me, and he didn't know what to do. I wouldn't know what to do. And so I sat in the back of the room, because that's where I always sit when I'm new. And I sit in the back of the room, and they ask in our group, is there anybody in the first 30 days of sobriety, please raise your hand, not to embarrass you, but so that we may get to know you. And I wasn't going to raise my hand. I hate that. Except when you have 31 days, it's not so bad. It's not so bad doing that. And I didn't want to do it. I wasn't going to do it. And the couple that helped 12-step me, they, you know, he looked over and pointed his hand up. And I went, okay, so I scratched my head, kind of did that. My dad happened to turn around and saw me. And they had participation in that meeting right after that. And he got called on, and he said, well, my name is Jim Shaw, and I'm an alcoholic. And he said, I see that my daughter is here in the meeting, and of all the Christmas presents in the world, this one's the best. And he said, I hope she finds this way of life. And from that day to this, I have found this way of life. This is a way of life for me. I don't hit meetings. I'm committed to you. I owe you everything. My aunt and uncle are sitting here today because of a sober niece. I owe you that. You bet I'll get on a plane. You bet. You bet I'll come and be a backup. You betcha. I got a sponsor. God, she was so mean. And I needed every bit of it. I really did. I wouldn't have traded anything. God knew exactly. If I just let God work, if I quit thinking, I asked an old-timer, I go, why in the world would anyone write those for slogans? And he said, Sheila, it meant think yourself through a drink, not think. I go, oh, I like that. You know, think the drink through, all the way through to jail, you know. I go, oh, that's good. Because I thought a lot, and I thought constantly about myself, not you ever, but I thought about myself all the time. And I remember I had 6 months sober, and my sponsor, I had 3 months sober, and a friend of mine, I had become friends with in the program, she was going to have 6 months at the Saturday night meeting, and I was so excited, and I went on and on, I was talking to my sponsor, she's going to have 6 months, and then we're going to go over here, we're going to play Trivial Pursuit, and she goes, do you know that we've had a conversation and you haven't mentioned yourself at all? She said, this is a miracle. I'm writing it down. Now, I hated her again, you know. I just hate her. So I went to the meeting Saturday night, and the speaker said, if you're not mad at your sponsor, they're not doing a good job. So I tapped her and said, you're doing such a good job. She really liked that. Got arrested when I was 90 days sober. Right after that, I got arrested. Yeah, that was real fun. Got arrested and had to call my dad because they had my son. And I was just driving over to their house and made a right on a red light. It said no turn. I hate that corner even now in Norman. I always tell everybody, stop there or they'll arrest you. But I turned right and I handed over my license, happy, joyous, and free because I'm sober. But I forgot to pay anything when I left California, so I was in deep doo-doo is what it was. And so he said, you're under arrest, and I said, but I'm sober, and he starts searching the car then. Yeah. No respect. So they take me to the jail, and I got to call my dad, and I'm scared to death, but yay, Vinoy answers, my stepmom, yay, she answers, thank God for Al-Anon, and she said, where are you? And I said, I'm in jail. And she goes, ha, ha, ha. And I go, I'm in jail. And it's this much to get me out, da, 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 da. And she went, Jim, she was in jail. And I mean, I didn't even need a phone to hear him. Oh, God. And he just screaming his head off. And she said, now, Jim, the baby, be nice. And he said, leave her there. And I'm like, I'm sober. Tell him I'm sober. And I kept going on and on. And he said, I don't give a good God. Blah, 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 blah. And he went on. He's screaming his head off. I go, did you tell him I'm sober? She goes, she's sober, Jim. I don't care. Oh, just on and on. So I'm going, I'm sober. Tell him I'm sober. So the jail lady walks by and goes, who cares? And I said, it's very important to be sober when you call for bail money in my house, let me tell you what. And my father wouldn't even come pick me up, but he did send the money with his wife, and she took me to my AA group. You know, it's meeting time. like I thought this is the start of my problems here. I'm sober, I'm trying really hard, and look, nothing's, it's horrible. I'm insane, and I hate, and I was better drunk. I was better off drunk. I remember I said that. And they said, Sheila, that's alcoholism. You know, are going to give you the ease and comfort. And somebody explained it to me, and then a week later I got to hear Clancy, and he explained it better than anyone has ever explained it. That I have alcoholism. I don't have an alcohol problem. Alcohol is my friend. It was my friend. Alcohol is my solution. It is not my problem. I have alcoholism. Because he talked about when he sobered up, he wanted to kill himself. And I absolutely identified. And that I have to do the things in Alcoholics Anonymous. It took a lot of booze toward the end of my drinking to get me. I mean, I drank like a man. You know, when your big biker buddies are going, you sure drink a lot for a little girl, you know. You might take a look at that, too. But it's just a suggestion. And, you know, and that's what happened for me. Today, I have to do a lot of AA to feel okay. I have to do a lot of, I drank a lot to feel, get even, and today I have to do a lot of AA to get even, to just get, feel even. And that's how I am, that's how my father was. I understand now why he was always with you. I used to feel kind of jealous. I used to think he loved you more than he loved me. And it wasn't that, it's just that this is where he gets his solution. Alcoholics Anonymous is my treatment for alcoholism. There is no cure, but it is my treatment. I go to a lot of meetings, and going to meetings doesn't make me a bad mom. Being drunk would probably make me a bad mom. You know, and I know a lot of women that stop going and or hit a meeting here and there because they have children, and I believe I wouldn't have my children if it weren't for you. I would never. Why would I not do that? Why would I not go to meetings? That little boy that was 20 months old when I got here is now 17 years old. On his 16th birthday, I took him to get his driver's license in a little red truck we bought him. And he drove off, and before he drove off, I was all teary because he drove me back, you know, from the license place. Gosh, I'm so bad. He goes, Mom, really, I'm not that bad a driver. And I said, he goes, are you okay? And I said, yeah, but, you know, it was his birthday. And I said, you know, 16 years ago, I had no idea how I was going to raise you. I had no idea what to do.
And I said, but I had hopes and dreams for you. And I said, today, your life is everything I could ever want for you. And I was so grateful to you and to God. He's a baseball player. He's so cute. Oh, God, there's so many girls at our house. It's ridiculous. He plays baseball, and he's really good, and he likes people. He loves you. He's an AA kid, you know. His buddies are like 16, 17. They're 17 now. And our group meets on Main Street, and they wave and honk. Hi, Sheila. You know, they ride by. You know, they come by. They know when the, you know, they know on birthday night there's cake and come food. Come to all the eating meetings, honey. You know, he brings all his buddies. Oh, the perks, you know. Mom's an alcoholic. And you know, we were talking one day, and he said, you know, he was talking about Julie. Oh, Mom, Julie, she made us, she is like the perfect mom. She's wonderful. I mean, you know, steak and eggs for breakfast. I mean, this woman is just incredible. Betty Crocker. And this is one of his dear best buddies. And he said, I love Julie. And I said, Brad, I wish I were more like that. I'm just not like that. He goes, no, Mom, but you're the mom that people can crawl through the window to at 2 o'clock in the morning and everything's okay and you understand. I said, you're right. He said, there's like so-and-so and she's like Betty Crocker. And then there's so-and-so and she's like the perfect super mom. And then there's you, Mom. You're goofy and we love you like that, you know. And he said, but, you know, he said, you are who you are. And he wrote me a card on Mother's Day. You know, you're the best mom I could ever have. You know, you gave me that. I met a nice man in AA. While I was in AA, he's not in AA. He says he's normal, or he used to be before he met me. Anybody married to me, we've been married almost 10 years. Anybody married to me could not ever maintain that and be normal. I mean, why would you? And we have a son together. When I got pregnant, and I was really, it was right after we got married. I mean, we weren't married 2 months, and I was pregnant. And I said, I'm sorry. And he said, honey, we're married. I go, oh, I can call Dad. Oh, good. You know, we're married. It's okay, you know. I said, well, I thought you wanted to wait. He goes, so what? It's fine, you know. And in my 6 month of when I was pregnant, 6 months, I found out I was to have twins, and I was so happy, and I was doubly blessed, and I was overwhelmed. And a month later, I went to the doctor, and one of the babies was sick. And we had found out one was a boy, but I didn't want to know the other one. I was hoping it was a girl, and wanted to be surprised. That day she told me, I said, I got to know, and this is before I knew the baby was sick, and I said, I've just got to know, what is the other one? I can't stand it any longer. She said, you really want to know? And I said, yeah, I really do. And she said, well, it's a little girl. Oh, I was so happy. And 20 minutes later, we would be sitting in a doctor's office, you know, and he would be telling me that baby probably wouldn't live. And I'm 7 months pregnant, and I don't understand. And I'm sad, and I'm afraid. And he said, Sheila, it's nothing you did. It's just something that happens. And I said, well, what do we do? He said, there's not anything we can do. We just take it a day at a time. And went to a specialist that Monday morning, and he said, I'm so sorry, she didn't survive the weekend. And my heart was broken. But you showed up at my house, and you were all there, and I have never had to walk through anything alone. You've always loved me, and you've always given me strength when I didn't have it. And sometimes I just didn't have it. And the other baby, he was a little boy named Daniel. He's our Danny. My Danny. God, I just love him. You know, but he likes tattoos and motorcycles. I'm kind of worried. You know, most kids, I'm gonna be a doctor when I grow up. And Danny's like, well, I want a tattoo when I grow up. I'm like, oh, God. His dad just shivers. Oh, and he looks at me. I go, I don't have any tattoos. Don't get on to me now. I thought about getting a butterfly once, putting it on my hip, and I thought, you know, when I get real old, it'll be on my knee and it'll be a moth. So much for that idea. I get to have a sober baby. I got to be a sober mom, a new mom. I felt like God had given me a chance. And I said, you know, I didn't do anything. I was so good in this pregnancy. Why couldn't I have both of them? And, you know, I don't believe I believe God is there because bad things happen. I don't think he makes them happen. And somebody said, you know, Sheila, God did not take your little girl. He received her. And that sure fixed me. And I sure did fix me. Daniel is 9 years old, and he's a sweetie pie, and I'm blessed to have him. I was on the phone with my husband on the way here, and he had a home run in his ball game last night, you know, and I felt kind of guilty I wasn't there, you know. And they said, don't worry about it. You're only at 800 of them, you know. And he said, he'll just have to hit another one, you know. And that's, I have a very understanding husband who allows me to do the things I need to do to stay sober. He said, I've heard that story. I do not want her. I said, go do what you got to do. I'll be here. My husband, anybody that meets him always says he's the nicest guy, and you know, he really is. I didn't like nice guys for a long time. He is a nice man. I wouldn't push him, but he is a nice man. He really is. And I'm so glad that he understands what I do to stay sober and to stay alive. I'm going to tell a little story and I'm going to sit down. My father and I came together because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because of the steps and because it says in the book, the right answers will come if we want them. And I wanted them. I wanted to take right action. I used to get up. When I lived with my parents, I had to do something nice for them, and so I did. I had to do something nice for my dad to get over this thing. And I didn't like it, but I did it. And I got up every morning, and I would make him hot. He always drank hot tea, and I'd make him hot water. I put on his kettle, and I would go out and get the paper and bring it into him. And we could talk about two things, sports and the weather, and that's it. That was what we could talk about. I love sports. I absolutely adore sports. And my father gave me my love of sports. My husband thinks I'm wonderful because I can sit and watch everything with him, you know. And my dad and my brother gave me my love of sports. And we could talk about the Dodgers, and we could talk about a lot of stuff. And one morning I got up, and he was reading his big book in his chair. And I don't know, I kind of felt something for him. I thought, well, that old coot really does do this reading stuff, you know. Get up in the morning and read your pages thing, you know. And I said, what are you reading? He said, working with others. He said, that always helps me. So I stay into that, and I do the right thing and help others and get out of self. And, oh, it's pretty good for an old guy, you know, for a mean old daddy. And I kept taking right action until I wanted to get the paper. I wanted to make his hot tea, and I wanted to have those morning talks. And I loved them, and I cherish them in my heart today. When I found out I was pregnant with Daniel, my father was the very last person to know that I was pregnant when I wasn't married. Someone wrote him a letter when I was 5.5 months pregnant, and he was absolutely heartbroken. He wanted more for me, as I would want for my child. And I made direct amends for that. You know, I'm sorry I had a child out of wedlock. I know that's not what you wanted for me, Daddy. You know, will you please forgive me? And he said, of course, that's the best mistake he ever made. And he loved my son. He was a great grandpa. He was such a good grandpa. And so what happened was when I was found out I was pregnant with Daniel, I said to Dave, could we not tell anyone and let me tell Dad first? I said, I want him to be the very first to know because he was the very last to know with Brad. And he said, of course, that would be right. And I called him, and I got to tell him, and I said, you know what? I said, I'm going to have another baby. He said, oh, I'm so happy. And I said, and you're the very, very first to know. And he was touched. And you all have taught me how I can make living amends along with direct amends. My dad died 4 years ago this coming week. He got cancer and died very suddenly. In 3 months, he was gone, and my heart was broken. I was mad. I didn't want him to leave. I wasn't done. I said, went to visit him. He lived in Palm Springs, and I said, I was sitting outside on the porch, and he came out, and he wasn't sick, real sick yet. And he said, are you all right, baby? He put his arm around me. It's big hands. My God, just like look a meat hook hit me, you know. And I said, are you all right, honey? And I said, no, Dad, I'm really not. I can't imagine my life without you. I said, I feel like we just got it all together, and now you got to go. He said, yeah, my mission's up. He was so okay with where he was. And he said, but I'm handing the baton to you. He said, you stay on the firing line. You go help those women. He goes, and I'll be watching. I bet he is. He said, I'm okay with where I'm at. My mission's up. I have these braces on. For those of you in the back, it is not a... My tongue's not pierced. Had some old-timers country one night, and they said, well, I thought your tongue was pears. Talking all that spirituality and your tongue was pears. I said, no, but I thought about it. By God, if I was 20, I'd look like a pincushion today, I'm sure. And he said, we kept seeing this reflection, you know. And I said, no, it's my braces. A year before my dad died, we were at the International and in San Diego, and we were just talking. He said, you know, I just really feel bad that I never got to get your braces. I said, well, Dad, he said, you got that sweet little face and those crooked, crooked old teeth. And they really were. And I said, well, Dad, it's on the list. You know, Dave and I have a list of, you know, wants or loves or needs or whatever. And I said, it's on the list. It's right after, like, groceries and roof kind of thing, you know. And he said, well, I just feel bad that I never did that for you. I said, well, Dad, you know, I'm a grown-up now, and I can probably, you know, if something's not right, you know, it's my job to take care of it. It's my job if there's something spiritually wrong with me to take care of it, if there's something emotionally, physically. It's my job. That's what I'm here, you know, I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, we'll get them someday. Well, I got them a year ago, and I went outside of the dentist's office, and I looked up to heaven, and I go, I got my braces on. Then I start thinking, which is, you know, don't you, isn't that the worst? I hate this. I'd be fine without my mind. And I would. So I'm getting in my van and I start thinking, I wonder if he can see my braces. I wonder if he's really in heaven. I wonder if there's heaven. I wonder if there's God. It's spiraling. It's worse. This is, I'm giving you a glimpse. I live with this 24 hours a day. You get a little glimpse tonight, you know. Or today. And so anyway, so it's getting really dark inside here, and I'm feeling really, So I have a cell phone. My husband got me another phone because he said, God knows you have to have a phone wherever you are. And so I pick it up, and I thought, I'll call somebody I sponsor. That's a good 15 minutes out of yourself. How are you? And they'll go. And so I called this girl I sponsor, and sure enough, boy, howdy, she went on and on. I just loved it, and I felt better. I felt a little relief. And two nights later, I had already committed to go to this it's called First Step. It's where women go, and their next step's prison if they don't get it together. And we were taking a meeting there, and we got lost. It was out in the woods. I mean, there are some woody places in Oklahoma. We could not find it, but we found the men's facility. We're 30 minutes late for this meeting. Now, I am early. I am like crazy early. And I am panicked at this point. And I said, they said, Sheila, we'll just call them and say we tried and we lost and you guys gave us, they did, they gave us the wrong directions. And I said, no, let's go back to the men's facility, because we kept thinking, surely the women's facility is here any second, because the men's facility was there. I said, no, let's go back to the men's facility. We will call over there, tell them we are coming, we're sorry, we're lost, and then get directions. And they said, okay, we knew you'd probably do that. And so I did. And we got over there, and they said, you've got 20 minutes. And I said, can't we just start the meeting from now? And they said, no, we have to eat. I said, okay. So we went, and I said, there were four of us, and I said, well, instead of doing step two like we were going to read, let's just do a five-minute panel each real quick. And you know, the girl shared, and then I shared, and I talked about, you know, I don't know why, but I talked about getting my braces, and that if there wasn't if I wanted something in life, I could work for it. If I wanted to be sober, I'd have to work for it. And that's what I was saying. And I said, you know, I got these braces, and, you know, and I told him how my dad really wanted me to get it, but I could do it for myself today. And then I said this. I said, and I hoped my dad danced in heaven. I hoped. And I looked across the room, and about this far, these women, there was about 50 women in this room, and they were kind of sitting in a half circle. Straight across from me, had she been sitting anywhere else, I would have never seen her. Straight across from me, there was a girl sitting there, and I look at her, and I said, where did you get your shirt? She said, out of the donation closet. And I said, honey, that's my dad's plumbing shirt you have on. I said, the even more bizarre is that my father's plumbing business was in Los Angeles, California, not Oklahoma. And he hasn't been in business in 3 years. And I doubt my God. I doubt my God. He loves me. He even cares that my dad sees my braces. You know? I felt so, I was overwhelmed. I couldn't even talk. And one of the girls came up and said, Sheila, I think God's letting you know your dad saw your braces. And I said, I know. You know, I know. And I think there's a window in heaven, and I think that there's so many of us, and I know we've lost people we love, and they're up in heaven. And I think sometimes when something goes on that God knows is special to us, you know, I think God calls them to the window and says, look, come look, look at that. You know, because that's how much God really loves us. You know, I thank you so much for having me here today. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheila. That was great. I have asked Omar to read a vision for you.